Welcome everyone, it is Andrew here, one of your co-hosts for HomeKit Insider, Apple Insider's latest podcast, joined by my good friend Steven.
Hey man, excited to talk about HomeKit again. Man, we've had some awesome support on social media and people around the HomeKit industry and who are really interested in that. They're pretty cool people, I gotta say.
I know, it's really good. I love the engagement with this. We've done so many different projects and, you know, some of my oldest articles are, I'm still getting emails about just writing about HomeKit. So it's just such an engaging space. The community is, you know, it may not be huge yet. It is still growing, but just the community has always been so welcoming and engaging and supportive about everything. So it's been really great to see that support as we've continued with this podcast.
Yeah, man. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about our favorite company whose name we may or may not have learned to pronounce, but maybe the news first.
I guess we should start off with the news. So the minor thing that kind of led us into the other was that Acara has their new their water sensor available in North America now. So it was available abroad. Now it's here. Their Acara sensors work with HomeKit. This thing is below $20. And there's also a lot of discount codes going out there right now because this thing just launched. So it's literally the most affordable HomeKit water leak sensor on the market. And it'll detect water at 0.5 millimeters and above. So it's not the most accurate. Some of the other ones can detect it even at smaller intervals, but still a great sensor and still very affordable. And that's finally now available to order over on Amazon. If you want to grab it, there's links in the show notes. But the other thing with Acara was how to pronounce their name.
That's right. So HomeKit Geek on Twitter tagged us in a tweet and sent us a video. This is from Acara Corporate. And it's Acara basically telling everyone how to pronounce it. It's hilarious because they have a bunch of people mispronouncing it at first. And then they finally say it's pronounced Acara.
They should have just included a link of all of our podcast versions of how we've pronounced it. Because I'm pretty sure we've covered half of those.
If someone wants to make a supercut of me and you both saying it all the different ways, I wouldn't be mad about that. I think that'd be hilarious. But yeah, so we'll put a link in show notes and in the article to that. The video is on Facebook, but it is from Acara. And it is how to pronounce their name. So thanks, HomeKit Geek, for sending us that. You know, I was wondering, I'm looking at this water sensor right now on Amazon, $18.99 right now, one day shipping, at least for me, down here in Lakeland, Florida. Mm-hmm. So it's running on a battery, I assume. Do you know if that battery is replaceable?
It is. The back is just a little twist out, coin cell kind of thing. You just twist it out, put a new battery in. Boom, good to go. There's two metal contacts on the bottom, and it just sits there. Anytime that water rises above that 0.5 millimeter mark, it's going to contact both those sensors. Obviously, there's a lot of dependencies here, such as making sure your ground is level. If you do not have a level surface, then it could take more or less to make sure it hit both of those contact sensors to trigger it. But, you know, we've seen from, there's ones from Fibaro is a good one, and they have like the pins, or there's actually like pressure sensitive pins that are touching the ground. So it's really making contact with the ground. So it's a very, very, very small threshold because it's literally poking into the ground with springs. So that's very accurate. And then we also have the Eve Water Guard, which is a nice one, which does a different approach because it has like that long metal mesh sensor cable that you kind of just weave around. And that's another option because it kind of gives you more surface area and then it lights up on the wall as well as sending those notifications. So it's really just kind of depending on what you're looking for. But as far as like water sensors go, we've talked about the importance of water sensors before. I can't remember if it was on this podcast or the original Apple Insider podcast, but we've talked about how important they are. And I definitely picked up a couple extra of these to throw under my sinks that I didn't already have water sensors. And as I'm remodeling my basement, I'm going to be putting these in my ceiling as well. So that way I really have, like, because it makes me nervous, you know, you're covering up kind of that ceiling, not anything like fancy, but just like a drop ceiling or something. I want to know if water is dripping down there and going to be kind of going through to different areas. So I might put a couple of these in some of the certain areas there where I know water would be able to pool up a little bit just so I can really keep on top of it for less than $20. And like I said, there's some discount codes out there. If you just Google them, just add that on to Amazon and knock a few bucks more off that.
I got to be honest, as you were talking, I just got one. So I'll let you know on the next show. This will be coming in tomorrow, according to Amazon. So
Nice.
Very cool. And now talk to me about Sonos. I have a couple Sonoses, and you said the S2 was coming out. I thought that was a product, which they did have products come out, but it's actually a big update to their entire system.
Yep, so this has been announced for a while. Sonos really tried to prep everyone for this and get everyone ready as to not ruffle too many feathers because they do drop support for some older players here. But essentially what this is an entirely new app. So you actually have the original app that's out now has been renamed like Sonos S1, their software system that everything is kind of running on. That's going to be the first gen app. Everything will still continue to work on that one if you so choose, but really they're trying to push everyone to the new S2 application and firmware across all their devices. Really, it only is going to matter if you have certain older devices, devices that are 10 years old, like the Play 5 Gen 1, the Kinect Amp Gen 1, the Bridge Kinect Gen 1, the Zone Players, things like that that are, you know, more than 10 years old at this point. Those things will not work with the new S2 system. They won't work with a new app. And if you move your whole platform to the new S2 app, then those you can run both at the same time, but they're going to be two separate systems. So I can't group a Gen 1 Play 5 with my new Sonos Move. You could if you keep everything on S1, but really this is just about moving forward. Eventually they have to kind of cut off support for those products. Those products are still working. They can still run on the Gen 1 app, the S1 app, just as they did before. No problems. It's not like Sonos is like killing them and turning them into paperweights. They're still going to do exactly as they did before. They're just not going to be able to group with and be joined with anything that's running on the S2 system. For most people, it's probably not going to be a big deal at all, and this is going to just really enable higher quality audio streams and other new features coming down the pipeline, as well as supporting new products like the new Sonos Arc. It'll be out by the time this podcast is released, so it'll be announced, and of course we'll have a review of that very shortly. We're talking about this, by the way, because all these devices work with AirPlay 2, and AirPlay 2 is, of course, part of the HomeKit ecosystem. You can use Siri to control them, group them into scenes, you know, turn on your Sonos Arc and play your workout mix as you're jumping on the treadmill or something. Like, you've got a lot of different options there, but these are all part of that HomeKit ecosystem. So I know Sonos is such a big name in the space. I wanted to talk about that S2 update as it is finally rolling out today, the day we're recording this.
Now, I just want to make sure that everyone knows that please don't jump on your treadmill. I'm not sure how Andrew uses his
treadmill. Okay, well, I was watching OK Go, maybe, and I'm like, oh, this is how you ride treadmills, sideways and upways and jump ways and slant ways. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, very good. Well, yeah, I downloaded it right before we started recording. It has a nice new tan app icon, so that's fine. But yeah, app seems... You know, if you knew how to use the old one, you'll know the new one. As I was putting that new app, because it's not an update to the old app, it's actually a brand new app.
Whole new app.
I searched in the app store for Sonos S2. If you just search for Sonos, there's a bunch of things that come out. But we'll put a link to the actual S2 app in show notes, so you can just click that and then download it on your phone. And as I was putting it in my folder, where I put kind of all my remote-type apps, I saw Acara actually just updated their app. It's pretty, looks like a... significant update. So as I get that water sensor next week, maybe we'll give an update on that as well. So pretty cool. Well, and then talk to me, the last piece of news we have here is the Eve Cam. It was launched. And then what happened, Andrew?
It all the pre-orders sold out. It was gone. I'm pretty sure before our podcast even went live, they were sold out.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel bad that we kind of like even talked about it and touted it, like how excited we were about this thing. And they were already sold out of these guys. So that's good. It's great to see. I'm really excited that, you know, they were able to move all their pre-orders. And there are more coming soon. I know more coming down the line. But just kind of crazy. Like, everyone is looking for these HomeKit secure video cameras, and we already have the Circle View out there, and now this thing is selling out right away. So that's just great to see that anticipation and excitement in the HomeKit space.
Yeah, that's amazing. So if you go to the Eve website right now, I went there and it says, more coming soon. That's all it says. So yeah, we'll see. Maybe also from other vendors, maybe directly from Apple or Best Buy. We'll keep you posted if it comes available somewhere else. I want to talk about a couple things, project-related things I've been doing. We talked about Philips Hue lights last week and how I've used the candelabra decorative-style bulbs now in my living room ceiling fan. But we had talked about how there's kind of a pain point with Hue bulbs that if someone flips off the light switch and you just have like a normal manual light switch on the wall, you lose communication with your Hue bulbs and they go out. And so I had actually gotten a Lutron Aurora is the name of the product. We'll put a link in show notes. You can get it on Amazon. You can also get it at Best Buy. I got it locally. It's actually on sale as we record. It's $30. It might be $40 by the time you see it. This little device, so you had told me about it, Andrew, really cool, by Lutron. It's a rotary knob. And what it does is you screw it onto a light switch in the up position. And it's kind of hard to explain. If you look at the picture of it, and if you're listening in Apple Podcasts or a lot of podcast players, we actually put chapter art with all of the chapters that we break up in the episodes for HomeKit Insider and Apple Insider. And so if you actually look at the chapter art right now in your podcast players you're listening, you'll see the product image that I'm talking about. But basically, it comes with this bracket that is used to lock your manual toggle light switch. And these are toggle light switches that are kind of the thin bar style, not the wide rocker style switch. You put the light switch on, and this little bracket kind of goes over the light switch. And then there's a tiny little screw. If you have to have kind of a very small Phillips head screwdriver in order to be able to screw this up. But you screw the bracket, this little screw there, and the metal plate that is on the bracket rises to then lock the light switch in place. You don't screw anything into the wall. You actually don't mess with the screws on the wall plate. It actually just this little thing raises to kind of hold the switch tightly in the up position, and then that bracket is on there, and you're done. And then all you do is take the knob, the actual Aurora, and it snaps onto that bracket. And you're good to go. It's super easy process. It takes like 2 minutes. And then when you're ready to use it, it's actually not a HomeKit product. So it's not something that you would add in the Home app or that you would actually even do in the Lutron app. This is something specifically a Friends of Hue brand that you use specifically with Hue lights. So when you go to actually add this to your system, you go to the Philips Hue app on your phone. And when you go to add accessory, you scroll to the bottom and there's a Friends of Hue or Friends of Hue accessories portion. And that is actually where you add this device. And to pair it, just double click and hold on the button that still starts flashing real quick. It shows up in the Hue app really quickly, pairs it, and then you just program it what lights you want it to control. You can have this knob control all your Hue lights or specific ones. And so I actually went overboard because I got a Hue light bulb in my outside light that I talked about last week, and I put the Hue bulbs in my ceiling fan, but I have two switches. One controls the outside light, one controls the inside. And so I went ahead and got a knob for each. And so when I install the first one for my ceiling fan, you program it in the Hue app to control that grouping of lights. So I have three decorative Hue bulbs in my ceiling fan, and I programmed that Aurora to control those three lights in a group. Now, you can actually click the entire knob, so it's a button. You can click it on and off, and then the outside of the Aurora is actually kind of like a jog wheel, and it acts as a dimmer. And so you can dim it way far down, or you can dim it all the way up. And it's actually an infinite scroll, which makes sense because, you know, the orientation may be different depending on the switch. And so you can keep rotating it clockwise as far as you want, and you get to full brightness. And then you could dim it down as far as you want, rotating it counterclockwise, and then click to turn on and off. And so I went ahead and got both of them, and it's a double toggle switch. I sent Andrew a picture of this in Slack. And so I got two of these Lutron Auroras just sitting right next to each other. One controls my ceiling fan. The other controls my outside light. They're always locked in the on position, so I never lose control of them in HomeKit. And it's working great. So yeah, kudos to Lutron and Hue for this. Kind of solves a problem, and I might expand it to more ceiling fan lights.
I'm glad it worked out for you. That, I mean, that was one of the biggest things that I had frustrated with. Like, I know everyone who has like Hue or LifeX bulbs is basically just putting tape over their wall switches to stop people from doing them. And I was over at my friend Sean and Caitlin's house, and we're looking at their lights, and I'm like, oh yeah, Hue bulbs in there. That's great. And there's like a switch on the wall. I'm like, how do you do that with, like, you know, your ones that are right there? Like, do you hit your switch? Or he's like, oh yeah, we just have to keep getting up. I'm like, wait a minute. So you like go and like sit down on your couch in the living room, and you're like, oh, the kitchen lights are on. Instead of being able to do it from the app, you have to get up and hit the switch on, and then you have to use your app to turn them back off because you have to like give power to them and then use the app to turn them off. And I'm like, how is that, you know, really beneficial? No. I think it's definitely, it's awkward. It's weird.
Yeah.
The biggest limitation, I think, with the Aurora is the fact that it does really only work with the standard toggle switches and not paddle switches.
Right.
A lot, I feel like more modern homes, they're switching to more of that paddle switch design, that little sleeker, a little easier just to boop them when you're turning your lights on and off. And I know there are other ones out there. I I'm trying to remember the name. I want to say it's Run Less Wires has a similar product that kind of fits over the plate, but I'm not 100% on that. So no one quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it's Run Less Wire and it kind of covers it up. And there's like single and double rocker options to cover up like a paddle switch on your wall and be able to add this kind of a rocker type deal in its place. I know there's others out there that kind of do that and kind of fix this problem. There's also ones that literally just cover them up. There's like sleek ones that you can put on there that are just a cover that look better than a piece of tape to stop people from hitting the switches. But it's definitely been a thing for Hue users.
Yeah. And it's great too for me because again, I have kids and so they're going to be like, well, how do I turn on or off the thing? And so it's great because it acts as a switch.
Yeah.
They can just push the Aurora, click it like a button, light turns on, light turns off. So yeah, kudos. There'll be a link to that product. You can get it on Amazon in show notes. And the second thing that I was playing around with this week that I just want to give a shout out to, we had mentioned it on the last episode, looking for apps to better manage your HomeKit accessories, scenes, automation, and all that. And so I had downloaded it last week as we were recording, and I finally got some chance to play with it. But shout out to the developer. I'm going to try and say his name. Please forgive me because I know I'm going to mess it up. But it seems like Matthias Hochgeterer. Maybe. Please correct me. I'm sure that's wrong. Please correct it. Please correct me. But Matthias, he developed the app Home Plus 4, and there'll be a link to that app in show notes. Home Plus 4. And, you know, it's amazing that Apple allows this app to exist in the App Store. I almost don't want to call too much attention to it because I don't want it to be taken down. But it's really like if Apple made the Home app really powerful and flexible. That's what this app is. It's a super simple, easy interface on the first screen. It shows you all your accessories on one scrollable page, kind of like the Home app. But then it gives you really powerful tools for managing groups of HomeKit accessories. You can set your scenes. And I love all the little like icon, nice touches that he put in the app to represent different things. Even the Ecobee sensors have their own icon for the device, and it just looks really good. Little thermometer for the thermostat. So very cool there. It shows you all your hubs and at a glance, and that's really cool. And you can set up those automations right here in the Home Plus 4 app, and they sync. They're HomeKit automations, and they would be in the Home app if you go back and forth. I tried it several times, whether I adjusted something in the Home app or the Home Plus 4, they sync back and forth. And it's great because if you have Hue bulbs, like we've talked about last episode and just now, you can actually create some scenes and automations that really get granular with that color control. And so like I have a scene for watching movies that I talked about. And for those Hue bulbs now in my living room, I can get to that color. They have the saturation, the hue, brightness, all that available in the Home Plus 4 app. You can do a hex code for a very specific color for your Hue bulbs if you'd like to do that. So yeah, just huge kudos. I'm going to this app as my kind of default when I'm managing my HomeKit accessories rather than the stock app because it's just great. It's a powerful app. So thanks a lot, Matthias. There's a link to that app in show notes as well.
Yeah, that's been a really, really good app. If I'm remembering my HomeKit history correctly here, so it actually launches just Home, just simply the Home app, and it preceded Apple's own because I believe Apple didn't really originally launch with much of a, you know, that front-end user interface for your devices. You were relying on a lot of third-party developers to expose that and bring that out into the App Store.
Exactly.
I don't know if they just didn't trust third-party developers or they felt they could just do something simpler or different, or they maybe just wanted to bring more visibility to it by including it on devices, you know, as a default. But they eventually came out with their own Home app. And then actually, I think when it was around the time he was releasing version 4 of Home, Apple actually end up having an issue with it and saying you can't call this Home. And they actually had him change his name. So even if you're looking at like the URL on like the App Store, it's literally just Home 4 is appends like the whole ID. So he actually had to change the name to Home Plus, and then it's obviously version 4 of his original app.
Well, anyway, it's a great app. If you're into all the HomeKit accessories that we've been talking about, definitely check it out. Home Plus 4 on the App Store. There'll be a link in show notes to download it there. So, Andrew, we've talked a lot about Hue lights and all that kind of stuff. And you asked me, well, have you ever heard of this other accessory? I'm going to let you say it first.
Why do I have to say it first? Okay.
For our listeners' benefit, we spent, what, maybe 10 minutes figuring out how to pronounce this word correctly because it is Scandinavian. Is that right?
I believe so. I mean, it's IKEA, yeah, you guys. It is the IKEA smart lights. And I'm sure half of you are already laughing your butts off because you know that we're gonna pronounce it incorrectly. I've always just said, like, Trodfri, and it's Tradfri. There's different pronunciations online, Trodfri, whatever Scandinavian way you pronounce this word. It is the IKEA line of smart lights. And we actually had Julian Goes Pro on the YouTube video. We actually released videos of these, not actual on-camera stuff of anything, but just audio on YouTube of our podcast. And we had Julian Goes Pro asking us kind of to go into more of the differences between the Trodfri lights and the Hue lights, because they are two very popular systems. And with Hue being kind of one of the earliest and biggest, most popular names in the smart home space, as well as just in HomeKit, and then the IKEA line of just being very affordable, as IKEA is known. So I think a lot of people were kind of wondering, like, okay, which route should they go? Should they go into the IKEA system or should they go into the Hue system? And they are pretty different. So I thought we might as well kind of touch on that a little bit more and kind of see which way we lean and which way may be best for everyone else.
Now, these accessories require their own hub.
Correct. Both Hue and the IKEA line, we're just going to sidestep the word, and the IKEA line both require a bridge. And even that, kind of funny enough, before we even get into like the bulbs and devices, their bridges are vastly different. So the Hue bridge is just a round circle with a big old blue lined button on the top of it. And then there's your Ethernet port in the back and your power port. And yet IKEA is actually doing this whole, it's like covered almost. So it actually kind of hides stuff inside of it, and it looks really nice. IKEA actually has, a better looking hub for their Trodfri bulbs. So, I mean, that's even just one big difference out of the gate. You can kind of wrap the cables around it and then cover it up, and it looks a little bit nicer.
But it looks pretty big, too. Like, it's larger than the Hue.
It is. I mean, it's getting covered like that. So, yeah, it definitely is a little larger.
Before we get it too far into it, is this actually HomeKit enabled?
Yeah, so both of these guys are going to be entirely HomeKit enabled. The Hue one, for people who have stuck with Hue for such a long time, they originally had a round bridge out there, then they came out with like a rounded square version bridge, their bridge Gen 2. That Gen 2 one is what brought HomeKit functionality. On the Trodfri side, they came out with their bulbs, and then they have essentially the gateway that goes along with it, and that gateway is what brings that smart and remote functionality to it, versus just being able to control it from, because you can go with the IKEA bulbs and just use like the remote control or their dimmers and stuff like that, or their motion sensors, and not get into the whole smart home HomeKit side of things. But that gateway does enable that functionality for those, so both here are HomeKit compatible.
Gotcha. And now I'm looking at this, but the product we just talked about, the Lutron Aurora, that kind of thing is not going to work for this, because that is specifically a Hue partnered product.
Yeah, so this is going to basically almost like the longevity of the brands. So obviously it was originally Philips who created the Hue line, and then it was kind of spun off. Now it's owned by a parent company called Signify. Signify is it's not like it's a whole other thing, but I mean, they've basically licensed the Philips brand, have been running the Hue ship for a few years now, and have made just great strides in growing the brand and functionality of those bulbs. And I think that is one of the biggest differences in my eyes between the IKEA line and the Hue line. The Hue line has a massive, massive, massive number of accessories available. And that goes for everything from the different types of bulbs, whether you're looking for like BR30s, or you're looking for can lights, or you're looking for just your standard ones, but you want just a white version of them, or a color version of bulbs, or you want outdoor spotlights, the bigger outdoor spotlights, you want sconces, you want literally like a chandelier type thing built into your ceiling, you want the play bars to go behind a monitor or a TV. You want the signs to go up in the corners of your room that look super sleek and modern. You want accessories like the Lutron Aurora or the Runless Wire, toggle switches to control things, dimmer switches, motion sensors, indoor lights, outdoor lights. Like, the list of devices that Hue has done is incredible. And there's not only their own things, but then they have the part that Lutron is included in, which is the Friends of Hue, I believe is what they call it. And that's just another licensing play of all those other companies that are able to create products that work specifically with Hue. And that is huge for me because I do have those Lutron Auroras and I do have other, wall switches or something that are part of just the Made for Hue or the Friends of Hue platform. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of partners that are bringing their own kind of style and everything to it. Whereas the IKEA line, it's simple. You've got white bulbs, you've got color bulbs, you got your standard E26 base, you've got, I think there are some E12 candelabra style bulbs. They do have like their first filament bulbs out there. They might have some GU10s that are a little bit lower on the brightness than I would like, but they have a few options, but not a ton. Not nearly as many as you do with the Hue side. So I guess my point is, if you're looking at this, you're starting out, you're really just planning on getting a couple bulbs and your bridge. Where do you plan to go? If you really plan to keep it that small and simple, it's not a big deal. But if you want to expand this thing, you don't want to buy another bridge because there's not a specific bulb you need in the IKEA lineup. You got to go through the Hue route, and then you end up with two bridges, or you're going to sell one platform and go to the other. If you really want to expand this and you want those options, then Hue is the way to go. But there is a pretty big price difference between the Hue side of things and the IKEA side of things, obviously, because it's IKEA, and they really do a good job of keeping those prices down. They're a little murky in how things go, but I mean, you can get, an E26 bulb and their controller for $20, plus a bridge for $35, the motion sensors for like $10. There's a bunch of like different IKEA products that kind of go along with this platform. Their E12 candelabra bulbs, I think, are like $9. Like, a lot of their bulbs are really cheap, where Hue bulbs can easily get up to $60 a pop.
Right.
No matter which way you cut it, that's a huge, huge difference. Like, Hue may have a lot of bulbs, but if you can't shell out, their white bulbs are cheaper, and there's a lot more affordable options in the Hue lineup than there was. But it's just something to really pay attention to and how expensive things are going to get.
On the cost, too, because the decorative bulbs I got for Hue for my ceiling fan, $25 a pop, white only, no color. And the Hue bridge, I believe, is $60 on its own. Looking at IKEA's option, you can get their gateway, their hub, basically for $35, like you were saying. And their decorative bulbs for like ceiling fan styles is only $18. So you're saving $7 a light bulb, which may not sound like a ton, but when you have to buy three per ceiling fan that you're going to be dealing with, that definitely adds up. So yeah, curious, definitely more economical if you're just looking for that straightforward, white, dimmable, smart home bulb.
Absolutely. And when we're looking at the performance of these things, there are a few benefits to the IKEA ones. They're kind of like hackable. And I don't mean that in like a nefarious, gonna flicker your lights all day type of thing. It's more of like being able to get them to work with more stuff and kind of play with them more. So if you're kind of like the hacky type and you want to really get in there and kind of play with stuff, you might have more luck with the IKEA side of things versus the Hue side. They get a little tighter there, even though there's a good app ecosystem and all this other stuff to go with the Hue side. They can be a little bit more tighter, a little more tight with security, which is obviously beneficial. Actually, also the Hue bulbs, it cannot be as bright. There are some brighter options, like up to 1,000 lumens on the IKEA side, which is pretty awesome. So if you're really looking for bright bulbs, Hue has been upgrading their brightnesses over time, but the trade-free ones are definitely a little bit brighter than the Hue ones are. In different regards. It just depends on the bulbs you pick up because there's so many across both sides of things, but they can get up to that 1,000 lumen point on the IKEA side. Okay, so going into actual performance setup and all those things, there's a big difference here between the two. The IKEA side is not easy or quick to do. It can really take a long time, especially if you have a lot of bulbs, and you have to do them one by one. And you have to use some sort of what they call like a steering device, which is like their remote control, like their circular remote thing. You need something like that to actually set up these bulbs. You have to go to each one and set it up that way, and it is laborious and at times frustrating. I have tried to set these up, and I had so many issues getting these set up and working properly. Whereas on the Hue side of things, you can basically put all your bulbs in, and then just go to like discover in the app, and it's going to find them all right away. And you can tap each one and it'll flash so you know which one is which, and you can properly name it and assign it to rooms. Boom, boom, boom. It can be very fast to set up. I have had issues in the Hue app getting some bulbs to be discoverable at times, but you can manually put in those serial numbers and then they were instantly found and added in those rare cases. But a lot of that was probably due to my location, where I mean, like a really big like apartment complex, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on, and I had interference issues constantly with different smart home stuff that was kind of communicating. New house, zero issues whatsoever. Everything has been extremely quick and responsive between setup and everything. So it's still more issues with the trade-free side, trot-free side of everything versus the Hue. And they also were not as responsive either for me. The IKEA ones, sometimes I'd tell them to turn on, they just wouldn't do it. And I have had much more success and reliability with the Hue lights. So you're, in a sense, you're getting what you're paying for. It's more laborious setup process and not quite as responsive all the time with being controlled. There's a lot of people who have had issues with those bulbs, but they're so cheap. So it is kind of something you can almost just play with and see if it works for you. And if you do get it to work, then great. You've got a cheap, cheap, cheap home kit setup, which is great. But if you do worry about that, you might have to look at the Hue side of things, and you'll have to compromise maybe just with getting like the white ambiance lights, which are able to change from the different cool to warm shades of brightness or color, but keeping it at a lower price point than the full color spectrum bulbs that they also have. So it just really depends on your setup, which one is better. You get what you pay for with the IKEA brand. They are good at times, but we have had issues with them. They're really, really cheap. So it's got its benefits and its downsides.
Now, do you have some of these lights too?
I run pretty much exclusively the Hue side. I picked up the trade-free, trot-free, and I tested them out. I've used them for almost like 2 weeks, and they were not... I mean, I already had the Hue setup. I was basically just doing this to see how they were, and if I could expand my setup really easily using the IKEA line versus investing more into Hue. But I have had Hue since they originally launched, pre-HomeKit, and I've always been a huge fan of them. And I tried the IKEA ones just to see if I could expand the lineup a little bit more, and if they worked with HomeKit, then I wouldn't care as much, because now that everything's HomeKit, I don't care which brand it is, and I already had a pile of bridges. So I was like, I'll just throw these in here. I can get a whole bunch of extra bulbs and expand my HomeKit setup even more without having to shell out as much for the Hue lights. And they were not responding as quickly or at all sometimes, so I eventually just had to take them back.
All right, well, tell me about one other Hue thing that you reviewed recently.
Yeah, we actually talked about this, I believe, briefly last week as kind of a side project that I was working on, and now I've had it an entire week, really, in my new setup, which is the Hue Sync Box. So this is just another kind of benefit of that Hue ecosystem, of the fact that it's been around and they're getting kind of out there and how they're designing some accessories to go along with it. You could use third-party apps to control Hue, and one of the earlier things that I saw was being able to sync your Hue lights to music, which was kind of cool because they could change colors as you're like having a party and your lights are changing with the music or the tempo. It was a really neat thing. But I know people started trying to figure out ways to sync their Hue lights to their TV, their computer monitors, their games. Hue launched a desktop version of this app. So it's an official first party app that would allow you to sync your lights to your computer. But it was all software. And honestly, when I tested it, there was a substantial amount of delay between what was happening on your screen and the lights around you, and if there's a lot of quick changing going on in what you're watching or something, it would be annoying. If you're playing a game, maybe not as much, because you kind of have just a slowly moving point of view as you're moving like your character about, and it wouldn't be changing as quickly, and it wasn't as disruptive, but for watching movies and everything, it was just not really doing it for me. Maybe last year, 2019, I believe they launched the Hue Sync Box, and this is actually an HDMI box for your TV. There are four HDMI ports on the back, allowing you to plug in stuff like your Apple TV, your PS4, your Nintendo Switch, whatever you've got going on into the back of the sync box, and then plug that into your TV. It'll pass through your HDMI ARC commands, and with those most recent updates that we touched on last week, it'll now be able to synchronize to your Dolby Vision content and HDR 10 Plus content. So those higher resolution contents are now syncing with the Hue Sync Box. Now, Hue Sync Box is not in and of itself a HomeKit compatible device, but it of course works with any Hue lights, which are compatible. In my case, I'm using a Trio or a Duo right now. I just switched down to a Duo of the Hue Play light bars. Mm-hmm. These ones are really cool accent lights. they're meant to be like put in front of a TV, behind a TV, to the side of the TV, and even mounted to the TV or your computer monitor. You could also use them on bookshelves or really any, because they have so many different mounting options. There's like literally adhesives and there's stands in there to put them either straight down on the surface as like a bar and angled at the wall. Full color spectrum, everything like that. Just really, really awesome lights. And you can get like a pack of those for like $129 or something. It's pretty great. So those just all sync with your content. So I have those on the sides of my TV, all plugged in together, watching this great Dolby Vision content, everything from my Apple TV. It's been awesome. So I used to use it before, but now it's got those higher resolution contents. I've been playing around with this thing for the past week. And for movies and gaming, it's such a really, really cool experience.
Very cool. And so lights behind the TV, like when you're watching something, that's not distracting? Do you find it actually like enhances the experience?
So there's two different ways that people kind of have opinions here. So there's one opinion of having a static light that is behind your TV, which reduces some of the strain on your eyes because it's not just a crisp drop off of a bright TV. And especially as we're getting to like HDR, this bright content, to a pitch black background, that's more distressing on your eye. So people look kind of like the idea of having like a soft light coming behind your TV, which kind of diffuses it a little bit, not as kind of stressful. And then there's people who actually like that it syncs. There's nothing wrong with either of those. People really are okay with either route. There's nothing wrong with either of those decisions, which one you prefer. Personally, for movies and gaming, I love having the synchronized lights. For TV shows, absolutely not. It is too much flashing, too much going on, and then it's way too much for me. So for TV shows, and especially if you're watching commercials, it's a no. But for gaming and movies, I think it's a really cool experience. It kind of brings you in. You can have those lights as well as other lights in your room, ceiling lights, sign lights in your corner, like just bring all these things. Like, it can be very immersive. It's a really fun experience, but it's not for everyone by any means. And the new update that came out last week too allows you to control it via Siri, changing your inputs, all using Siri shortcuts. So that's a nice way to be able to control this as well. You can even build that into, you know, your HomeKit scenes and everything.
Very cool. Now, if I put this in between like my receiver, so I have 5 different inputs going into my receiver to TV right now. Can I put it in between my receiver and the TV itself, and will it function like it needs to?
Yep, it'll function just right. And actually, some people may want to do that anyway, because there are limitations to this box still, particularly with higher resolution audio formats like lossless audio, Dolby lossless audio, and a couple of these high-end audio formats get stripped out. So if you are using like a receiver, you can have that highest quality audio quality that you want and still pass the image through the sync box to get to your TV.
Very cool. All right, we had a listener question that you kind of did a ton of research on. All right, listener Alex Hall on Twitter sent this in. So yeah, tell me about the project that you underwent as you were figuring out how to answer this.
Okay, so I thought this was going to be easy, and I almost immediately kind of dismissed this as like almost a too easy question. So Alex said, okay guys, here's a question. A smart plug controls a coffee maker, and he wants us to turn itself off after X number of minutes, but it's turned on from whoever wants coffee first, not from an automation. So he doesn't want to create an automated scene based on motion or a time of day or something like that. He wants whoever to turn it on through the app or to turn it on by pressing the smart plug on the wall and that turning it on. Then he wants it to automatically turn off after the set amount of time. HomeKit does have this ability when you're looking at the automation tab. When you're creating an automation, it can do something. So maybe at a certain time of day, you want to turn on your lights and then you want it to automatically turn itself off after a certain amount of time. So that's the thing that you can do, right?
I do that with a pool pump. I actually have a Wemo, just a power outlet kind of thing, and I have a pool pump plugged into it. And so it turns on, runs for 2 hours, and then turns itself off.
Yeah, so that's the only way you can kind of do it. But he does not want to use an automation. You know, he doesn't want to do anything like that. So my next thought is maybe we could set up some sort of trigger that you can run that'll go ahead and back that off. So we could do things like putting an NFC tag on top of the coffee maker. You walk up to it, you know, him or his wife or whatever taps on that, it turns on and then it turns itself off after a certain amount of time. So that is an option. You could also do the same thing with a button. Get a HomeKit button, Logitech Pop, a car offers buttons. Everyone's got buttons. There's the Eve button, bunch of them out there. Fabaro's got called the button. A few different options there. So you get a button, HomeKit button, you press that button, turns on your coffee machine, and then turns it off after a certain amount of time.
Right.
Another great solution. But the problem with that is you're looking at spending a decent chunk of money just to turn your coffee maker on and off.
Right.
So at that point, I'm like, I got into that round. I'm like, yeah, I can't tell this guy to go buy a button just to reverse this scene, this turning this device on.
Right.
So my next way with thinking was kind of just to hack this thing together. So I thought, would this work? I would create a scene, turns the outlet on, and then I would create an automation that triggers that scene whenever the outlet is turned on and then reverts itself after a certain number of time. You know, if that train of thought makes sense. That is what would have worked probably a year or so ago. But HomeKit actually made a change. So that timer that reverts itself, it doesn't actually go to off. It used to go to off. So what you would do is you would create just that automation scene. So I would turn it on. That would trigger an automation that would essentially turn the light on, even though it's already on, and or turn the switch on, and then it would run for a certain amount of time, then it would go to off. But they changed that functionality in HomeKit without really making it apparent, and instead of just turning off, going to that off state, it actually reverts to its previous state. So essentially what would happen if I did that now is I would turn the button on, it would kick off an automation that turns the light on, and then revert to its previous state of on after that set number of time, and it did not work. So that was my original thought that I was going to try to do. But after a little bit more tinkering, we do have a solution, very easy to do. So if you have a device, a light or anything that you want to plug, you want it to turn on for a certain amount of time and then turn off after a certain amount of time, all you got to do is basically go to your automation tab and you're going to say when an accessory is controlled. Okay, so in this case, we're going to say my shelf lamp. I'm going to say when my shelf lamp turns on, go to the next step. And when you get to the part where you have to give it an action, so you're saying when the light turns on, do this. At that point, you're going to see a list of all your scenes and all your accessories. If you scroll all the way to the bottom inside of the home app, there is an advanced option called convert to shortcut.
Huh.
When you choose that, you actually get more options. So in this case, when my shelf lamp or whatever turns on, I want to wait a certain amount of time, put in whatever time it is that you want, 60 seconds, 5 minutes, an hour, put that number of time in, and then choose your house and do set to your accessories and take that shelf lamp and turn it off. Now you have that option. So now whenever this runs, I've tested this 1,000 times already, and I actually forgot to turn this off, and my studio lights kept turning off on automatically on me. I turn them on, and like 3 minutes later, they turn. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've disabled that scene or that automation so it stops doing it. But yeah, basically, you're just taking that automation and creating a shortcut where you have a lot more granular control over some of those devices. So in that case, it just, whenever your light switch is turned on, wait 60 seconds or 5 minutes or an hour, and then turn off.
Very cool. Well, nice job finding that out, man. That's
thank you. I was very excited about it. This seems like a shortfall within HomeKit. It seems like something that people would want to do is be able to automatically kind of revert or turn off those things after a certain amount of time. Kind of like, you know, toggle switches don't really exist inside of HomeKit, and you have to get into scripting to determine if a light is on or off whenever you press a button or something. But I'm glad there is at least a way to do it if you need to do it.
Very cool. Well, do you have a link that you can? Can you publish the shortcut publicly so people can like download the link?
I might, you know, I think it's probably not going to work best to publish it just because it does have my specific accessories in there. So if I'm publishing it, it's not going to necessarily carry across. But when we go ahead and publish this, the Apple Insider article that accompanies every, you know, podcast release, I'll go ahead and put a couple screenshots in there so everyone can see how my flow is laid out and how to pull that off.
Very cool. Well, check out everything that we talked about today in show notes. All the links are there. And you can also go to the post on appleinsider.com when that goes up, all the products. Thank you for everyone who has left us a 5-star rating and comment in Apple Podcasts. There's been a number of you, and we really appreciate that. It's really helping us out. I think we were pretty high near one of the technology charts for this podcast. So very cool. Great to know that you're all interested and want to hear all about the HomeKit products. Don't forget to tweet at Andrew and I and use the hashtag HomeKit Insider. If you have questions about a product, an automation, a how-to, anything at all, tweet at us and use the hashtag HomeKit Insider. We'd love to answer on the show just like Andrew did today. And just a heads up, listeners, because next week is the big WWDC week, we didn't want to release an episode on Monday before so many announcements will probably be coming. Surely HomeKit will be among them. So next week, look for a new HomeKit Insider episode to drop on Wednesday, June 24th. So no episode on Monday the 22nd. We're all going to be watching that keynote anyway. Instead, look for that new HomeKit episode on Wednesday, June 24th. We're hoping there's going to be lots of HomeKit and other exciting announcements at WWDC that we can talk about on that show. Thanks again for tuning in this week. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.